This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Friend of the show, ESPN, the SEC Networks, Jordan Rogers, joining us on the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline. First of all, Jordan, hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We were all watching Saturday there on the SEC Network, the Egg Bowl there in Oxford. Cole just kind of relived the story that we had, or you guys had, the conversation with one Mike Leach. If you were going to compare Mike Leach's offense to a casserole, which casserole would you compare it to?
Oh, this is good. Which casserole? I would say green bean casserole, and hang with me here, because I think on the surface and at times it looks simple and it looks like there's not much to it. But as you peel the layers to understanding the air raid offense and what it takes to execute it, there's a lot of intricacy. And you get in there, you start to taste some of those crispy onion strings, and depending on how the gravy was, seasoned in there, sometimes a green bean casserole can look like a pile of mush. And at times, Mississippi State offense has looked like a pile of mush. But there's some intricacy in there when you really start digging. And it's also very polarizing. Some people love it, and a lot of people hate it.
I attempted to, and did not do a very good job of telling the folks about you asking Mike Leach the most important traits of a quarterback, and that sort of getting involved with a gravy conversation, and how he kind of had a hard time distinguishing between telling us what was important about a quarterback and which gravy he liked the most.
I thought that was unbelievable. Yeah, he starts going on a rant about, Thanksgiving dinner plates and how, and really a great rant about how gravy elevates the entire dish. And it's crucial, right? You put it everywhere and it elevates everything on the dish. And I said, okay, so speaking of quarterback traits, what is the gravy to being a successful quarterback, right? What trait elevates that position? And then, about 5 minutes later, after going through every different type of gravy, from beef gravy to sausage gravy to everything in between, gravies I'd never even heard of, we didn't really get an answer about a quarterback trait. So I just kind of let that one go, and we had a great conversation about gravy and not really about quarterbacks.
Well, Jordan, your alma mater was in the news multiple times this weekend. Derek Mason, he has shown the door as the head coach of your Commodores. Just your thoughts on that move by Vandy, and is there anybody in particular that you're looking for, the characteristics of someone you would like to take over as the new head coach?
Yeah, it's not shocking. I think you could have made a lot of arguments about the timing, whether it should have been last year or whether, it's right to fire a coach in times of COVID when every administration is losing money. So timing doesn't really matter, though. It's just the fact that, winning 10 SEC games in 7 years is not going to cut it at any program. And obviously Vandy's expectations are a lot lower. And so it's tolerated to some degree. I tweeted this out yesterday, and I have a lot of respect for Coach Mason, love Coach Mason. He wasn't given the tools to be successful, and no coach at Vandy has been given the tools to be successful. And no coach will be successful until the administration decides that they want to put their full support. And, every time we have this kind of scenario, and I even talked to a few former players, high profile former players yesterday, that were saying, hey, I talked to the administration that they got a big plan for facilities. And I'm like, I've heard that. Back in 2012, we had this huge, poster that was on a tripod set up in the lobby about this huge master facilities plan. I ain't seen any of that. They still got the same old rotten wood lockers in the locker room that were there before I showed up. And so it's just, you can't be a successful coach without Jimmys and Joes, without having to recruit talent that can be at least on the same playing field. And if you're in the talent pool that Vanderbilt's going after, it means Missouri's probably going after you. It means Kentucky's probably going after you. Maybe it means South Carolina is probably going after you as well. And all those schools have better tradition, have better facilities, miles better important to you. You're going to go play somewhere else. And so I think they have to understand that is really the keystone. The most crucial aspect of being successful moving forward is not the coach. Yes, that is a big piece of it, but it's the tools that you give him to be successful, and that's the reason James Franklin walked out the door. Absolutely. He had to fight tooth and nail with the administration over things that every other school gets. And I'm not even talking about $100 million of facility upgrades. I'm just talking about the small things. And so he saw the writing on the wall. He knew that they weren't going to be able to be successful there long term. And so he got out at a good time. And that's what's going to continue to happen. It's going to be a stepping stone unless the administration decides that it wants to be good at football, or at least mediocre at football, but they haven't done that yet.
Talking to Jordan Rogers here on Three Man Front on the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline. What would you say to the skeptics, and some of them have thrown this out there, that Derek Mason was using Sarah Fuller, who became the first woman to play in a Power 5 game on Saturday versus Missouri, as a deflection to maybe take the focus off of what was that football product we were seeing week in, week out?
No, I don't think so. Just knowing Mason personally, I don't think so at all. He's a man of high character, high integrity. So I don't think, did it end up being a something that everybody talked about instead of the game? Yeah. But I don't think that was intentional in any aspect. In fact, I think Derek underestimated the impact that would have. I would guess that, a week prior, he was thinking about his roster and going, we don't have anybody. We might need to look outside the box. And I don't even think he anticipated how big it would become. Maybe there was some naiveness to that, but I don't think there was any intentionality to bring, any focus elsewhere. I don't think so at all. There's plenty of focus to be put on, even if they would have won that game against Missouri. There's still a lot of bad that has happened this year.
Jordan, I want to go back to what you were saying about the administration sort of getting behind this team and the football program. Is there a way that the incoming coach can sort of force that? Can they have that conversation before they actually take the job? Or is it going to be clouded by the fact that it's in Nashville, it's an SEC job, you're going to get paid a lot of money, you either take it or you don't, and that's the way it's going to be?
And that's a great question. I think it just depends, and this is where you look into who you're getting for the job, right? If you are getting someone that has had success at a smaller school, right, a non-Power 5 school that is maybe a hot coach. And there's, you could name three or four of them right now that are in that conversation. And I'm not speaking about one at Liberty right now because I just don't think Vanderbilt's going to dip into that pool for multiple reasons. But maybe another coach that's maybe not as well known. That coach is going to be intrigued by the immediate paycheck and also the stepping stone, right, because that coach maybe has ambitions that are above Vanderbilt, as James Franklin did. James Franklin was a hot coordinator at the time, and I think his ambitions went beyond Vanderbilt, but he realized if he could get something special to happen one or two years there, that he could move on. Now, that's why I think you have to go after a guy that is not focused on, or maybe the guy that has achieved a bigger job at one point. And that's why, yesterday I threw out the Barry Odom name, only because the personality fit, and I'm not even sure this is a great fit, but I was just trying to alliterate kind of the type of person that you might need. I think you need somebody that's been a head coach before at a bigger school, because they already have that on their track record. They're not trying to achieve that again. They're trying to achieve success and long-term success. And so maybe a coach that hadn't achieved that complete long-term success but knows how to build a program and is also the right type of personality. You have to understand what it's going to take. You have to understand that it's going to be a battle within that administration. And so that's why I veer maybe towards a guy with experience than somebody that is a hot coordinator or a hot coach that has done it for one or two years and is looking to do much bigger than Vanderbilt. Because I think you have to be someone that goes, I want to be here long term, and we're not going to get facilities next year. It's going to take two or three years to get the facilities that we need to compete. So I'm thinking 4 or 5 years in, we can start to see some tangible success, and not every coach is built for that.
Awesome. Great stuff from Jordan Rogers.
This is Three Man Front.